Greetings, strangers. I'm Britt.
And I'm Dee.
Welcome to another episode of It's a Strange World After All. What in the hell is happening? What you doing?
I was unplugging my charger because it started making that noise. Like the little, or it sounded like a fan. Oh. So I was trying to do it while you were talking. Anytime I didn't think it was going to make that much noise.
Anytime you try to be quiet, you should know from personal experience. Anytime you try to be quiet, you just twice as loud.
Yeah. What am I? Oh.
Let me do mine again. It's a strange world.
That was my air freshener.
Yeah, it's you today. What is happening? It's
too much going on. I don't know.
Lord. Oh, D, there's too much going on.
It really is, but
it's only been 2 minutes.
And then this has just been me. It's not even the people outside right now.
I know.
It's just me. My bad.
Right. You good.
Do it one more time.
Welcome to another episode of It's a Strange World After All, the podcast where we discuss true crime cases, the supernatural, urban legends, conspiracy theories, and all of the things that keep the world strange. Hey, D. I was about to say, hey, G, that's what?
Have you been drinking?
No, it's just been the longest day. I've been sober now for a week.
Oh,
for at least a week. You're supposed to say congrats, Britt.
That was technically what I said.
Oh. What I was trying to say was, guess what, D?
What?
It's still Women's Herstory Month. It is still Women's Herstory Month.
Mm-hmm.
So we will continue showcasing stories and cases centered around women.
In today's episode, we discuss the disappearance of Alexis Patterson, a 7-year-old girl who went missing after she was dropped off for school. This one it's a lot. Because
it is a lot.
I was just like, because this reminds me of another one I want to cover. But this little girl, I think she packed up her stuff and left. And she's still missing to this day. Her name is Asha Degree.
The other one that you want to cover?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
It kind of reminds me of this, only she didn't run away, though. But then it's like, did the other little girl run away? I don't know. But we will do that one, though. Because I think she was around the same age. Because I was like, you know how when we were younger and we used to get mad and we'd be like, oh, I'm leaving. And you pack up your little stuff in your little bitty Barbie suitcase. That's kind of how it was. But she left for real.
I remember I said I was going to run away. But my mom was like, you can run away, but you can't take anything that I paid for, me and your dad paid for. And I was like, that's okay. I'll be fine. Troy was like, you're just going to see a little naked girl riding down the street in some Walmart bags on her Heelys.
Heelys.
I was like, they weren't even Heelys. Lord. They were like the tennis shoes with the two wheels in them that my grandpa had got me.
Yeah, those are Heelys, right? Or something.
No, Heelys are the ones that only have them in the heel. Mine had them like a skate. Like yeah. you could pop out two wheels. I don't know what they were called. It was like the off-brand wheelies. I don't know. But I was like, you can't take those. Hilarious. My grandpa got those for me. It's like, you're gonna be skating down. But I didn't run away.
Yeah.
Alexis Patterson was born on April 4th, 1995. In 2002, Alexis was living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin with her mother, Ayana Patterson, and her stepfather, LaRon Burgess, and her six-month-old sister, Dasani. The family lived in a house near 49th Street and Garfield Avenue. The home was located just half a block from Highmount Boulevard School, where Alexis was in first grade.
2 weeks before Alexis went missing, parents at Highmount Boulevard School received letters warning them of a man who had tried to abduct a little boy near the school. A week later, a teacher saw Alexis talking to an unknown woman behind the school. Even after being lectured by her mom, Alexis was seen talking to the same woman 2 days later.
This makes me think that Alexis, or it leads me to believe that Alexis knew this woman. I don't think that after being lectured by her mom, by a black mom, not to say, you know, that black kids aren't out of control. I'm not saying that at all. But to be so young and after being lectured by her mom that she would continue to talk to a stranger. I don't know. I don't know.
That's true to me because, I know if it were me because I don't talk to people to this day. But if I'm her age and my mama told me, you know, hey, don't talk to this woman, I'm not talking to her no more. So she probably did know her.
Yeah. Or had seen her around something. Thank you. Yeah, that was immediately what I was taught.
Yeah.
On May 2nd, 2002, Alexis and her mother got into an argument because she hadn't finished her homework, which was due the next day. Since she didn't finish her homework, she was told that she wouldn't be able to bring cupcakes for her classmates, and this upset Alexis.
At 8 o'clock a.m. on May 3rd, Alexis was walked to school by her stepfather, LaRon. He watched her walk across the crosswalk towards the playground before he went back home. Alexis did not attend any of her classes. Students reported seeing her crying on the playground both before and after the school day ended, but no one remembered seeing her inside the school.
How the heck did she get away with not going to class? She's only in elementary school. Like, where are her teachers? Typically, you get like that automated message and it says, your kid has not attended class. Did they not do that in 2002?
I don't know. But if I remember correctly, Keisha used to skip elementary school. So it's possible.
How? Keisha, oh.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. Keisha went in elementary school in 2002. You somebody else. I know, but
I'm just saying it's possible. And I feel like it is hard to skip in elementary school because you don't switch classes. It's just one class.
Exactly. So, that's why.
Like, what was she doing?
I don't know. And then it would even make more sense to me if. No, never mind. I was going to say if she went to class and then after lunch disappeared, but then maybe her teacher would be like, wait, where is she at? But
oh, yeah.
I don't know. And then I guess we are to believe that because her mom upset her, maybe that's why she was crying. Like, because she wasn't able to bring those cupcakes. She didn't even want to go to school.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Okay. It's just weird. I just don't know in 2002 what they were doing. But nowadays, they don't play that. Like, after like 2 hours, you get that automated message. And it's like, your kid was not in school.
Yeah, see, they didn't have all that when I was in school. Because they would notify you until you would have to be absent for like a few days before the parents were even notified. Because that would make you truant.
Yeah.
So the parents would have to go to court. Because I think my mama had to go for Keisha before. Not to be putting her business out there. She was a good student.
Well, okay, yeah. And then stuff reads think when things like this happen, that is cause enough for schools to say, okay, how can we keep this from happening? Maybe we should address it the day of.
Yeah.
Because you just never know.
True.
Alexis's parents were not notified of her absence until after classes had been dismissed for the day. Because Alexis had no history of running away, Ayana and Laurent assumed she refused to go to class because of the argument she had with her mother the day before. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was emotional. She's a kid. She's emotional.
Yeah. Shortly after learning of her daughter's disappearance, Ayana contacted local police. It took them about an hour to respond. Immediately, the surrounding areas were searched, with the case initially being treated as a potential runaway. While speaking with some of Alexis's classmates, it was discovered that a red truck had been spotted parked near the school for most of the week, never dropping off or picking up anyone. The truck vanished after Alexis went missing and was never seen again. Police have been unable to determine if it's connected to the case or not. I mean, it seems like it is. That's a little suspicious.
It is pretty suspicious. Because what are you doing there? Right. If you're not picking anyone up or dropping anyone off, it seems like you're just stalking. Case in the joint.
Yeah. But they probably didn't take it serious because it was, I mean, they did. I'm not even going to say that. Because I wonder how much of this they looked into because they're speaking with kids. So are they remembering everything correctly? You know.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Because it says
the kids told them about the truck.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, if they all said the same thing, then...
I was going to say, I don't think a kid would misremember that, especially because, I mean, in our community, we're taught not to be trustworthy. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? So I can remember being a kid and thinking, why is this car part like, what? Or, you know, raping oh, yeah, and stuff then, like that.
They were on alert because of that man that was seen and the woman that she was talking to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I get it. Okay.
Alexis's biological father, Kenya Campbell, learned of her disappearance from local news coverage. On May 6th, he was released from prison and questioned by police, who said he was fully cooperative with the investigation. Ayana and Laurent were also taken in for questioning. Police focused on Laurent because of his criminal past. In 1994, he was involved in a bank robbery that resulted in the fatal shooting of a police officer in Glendale, Wisconsin. Both Ayana and Laurent maintain their innocence. Yeah, I don't see why her dad would have a motive. Also, he was in prison. I don't see how he could have orchestrated yeah. or what his motive would have been.
I think they really just questioned him to see if he noticed anything suspicious or whatever, but he was in prison. Or if he may have knew something. I don't think they really suspected him because he was in prison at the time.
Oh, so okay.
I think they were just, you know, trying to get all they could. Hundreds of volunteers passed out thousands of flyers with her description. Investigators went door to door in the days after she went missing, asking people if they'd seen her, and billboards were put up across Milwaukee asking those with information to come forward.
On May 14th, authorities announced that Alexis's disappearance was the result of suspicious circumstances and had been reclassified as a criminal investigation. Months later, they stated that they believe foul play was involved. That same year, police subpoenaed four Milwaukee television stations seeking tapes of past news coverage about the case. They didn't say why they were interested in the tapes, saying it was illegal to comment on sealed search warrants. So it was illegal to comment on why they were requesting that evidence?
Yeah, so I think what it is, they probably told them why they needed it, but they couldn't make it public as to why they needed it. Oh, gotcha.
Because yeah. they need it just in case.
Yeah.
Goes back to the whole, you can't give everything about the investigation just in case I don't know what I was about to say, but you knew what I was saying.
No, I think it was just because I know what you were trying to say, like how they withhold certain information.
Yeah, that's not one of those.
I think it's just because they told the news stations why they needed it. They just didn't tell the public why they needed it, because that's illegal, I think.
Okay.
That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah. Around the time of Alexis's disappearance, a man by the name of Brian T. Werner wrote and distributed racist flyers related to the case. He placed the flyers outside America's Black Holocaust Museum and on shop doors and car windows. They questioned why any white person should care about Alexis going missing. He was arrested for posting the flyers, but was released after it was determined that his comments were protected by the First Amendment free speech clause. Anyway.
This is my thing about these types of people. Like, mind your business. Like, we don't care that you hate Black people. We don't care that you don't care that she's missing. Like, how is your life inconvenienced by them putting up flyers? Like, why would you go out of your way to do this? Like, how insensitive is that?
And then this is a child. Like, what is wrong with you, sir?
Exactly.
Goodness. I cannot stand. I don't even want to get into it.
Man, no, I didn't really want to get into it either, but it's just pointless. It made no sense for you to do this. It was pointless.
Exactly. He don't have nothing better to do. Like, who has the time? Why do you have this much time on your hands?
Exactly. Go get a job.
Right.
Go head up some KKK, Ku Klux Klan, I can't even say it, some KKK meetings. Like, go do something else with your life. Like,
that is ridiculous. I hope he got jumped when he got released. They should have been waiting on him.
He should have.
Outside the station.
At the door. Yep,
I was waiting on you at the door.
With the head cock. Anyway. In August 2002, an anonymous caller contacted a local TV station saying that the missing child's remains were in the Milwaukee River near Eastbrook Park. The area was searched, but nothing was found. Hoping to find new leads, investigators looked through local sex offender registries, as well as probation and parole files, but were unable to come up with anything. I hate when the caller is anonymous. Like, I get it, I guess.
I know. Yeah, but still.
I don't understand, like, anonymous callers. Is it because they don't want to be connected with the case? Like, I don't understand why I remain anonymous.
Okay, I kind of get it. It's frustrating, but I kind of get it because there's been cases where people called in with a tip, or they either went to the police station with a tip and then they ended up being a suspect.
Yeah.
So I get it. Cause like, just don't involve me in it at all. I'm trying to help, but I'm not, you know, I don't want to be.
Yeah. They probably had warrants.
Or that too.
A couple of parking tickets. Yeah. Back child support? No, we ain't.
Numerous officers spent their off days searching for Alexis and were helped by the FBI and other state law enforcement agencies. For months, volunteers would search the city daily for Alexis. I just want to say that so far, what?
No, because I think you're going to say what I was about to say. That's why I was laughing, but go ahead.
Oh, no, normally I am very critical about the police, but I feel like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
Okay. Yeah, considering that it is a Black girl, because, you know, normally they don't even, I don't know. Well, they don't care most of the time when it's involving a person of color. But this time, I feel like they are doing what they should be.
Yeah, or it's not even to say that they don't care. It's just that they don't put forth as much of an effort. Like, and especially like in the beginning, I think, because too, there's this thing about in the beginning.
I did not mean to say that.
Stop. From the start.
I was thinking it. My bad.
There's this thing I think about them not seeing our children as children. Like they try to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot what it's called. Mom. But yeah, they.
I know. Where is she?
Yeah. See them as older. And so I think they're just kind of always drag their feet in the beginning. Like, oh, maybe she did this. And like, no, this is a child. See, she's missing. And yeah, like you said, from the start, they were like, oh, shoot. Yeah, we got to, let's get into it. Let's put out flyers. Let's do this. So I will commend them. Yeah, for this case, they did a good job.
Yeah.
About a year after her disappearance, her stepfather, LaRon, took a polygraph test in which he failed. The questions that were asked have never been publicly released. The same year, he was charged with a domestic dispute with Ayana, who was attempting to leave him. Ayana described him as abusive and threatening.
I'm not going to say nothing. Well, no, I'm not going to say it because it's a stereotype, but.
What you was going to say?
I was just going to say his name is LaRon. I don't.
LaRon.
LaRon. What's his last name? Burgess?
Yeah.
I don't trust that name.
Let's
just say that. But no, so. This was when I was researching it. This was my first time hearing about this case, but he always came off as shady to me. Not to say that he did anything to her, because I don't know, but he just seemed shady to me.
And he was the last one, right, that saw her. He's the last one that, well, other than the kids that are saying they saw her crying, he was the last person to drop her off at school.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not saying he did it because I can't. There's no proof, but you know what I mean. I don't like him. In 2005, a prisoner told investigators that Alexis's remains were buried in the south near a metropolitan area. This tip led to the search of a vacant home in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but nothing was found. So my thing is, I wonder what specifically led them to Louisiana, because he only said the South and I couldn't find anything else that said anything about Louisiana. So I wonder why they went to Louisiana.
I don't know. Maybe there was like a trail. I don't know. There had to have been something that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some follow-ups after speaking with the prisoner.
Maybe. Yeah, because there's not really a lot of information about this case, but I mean, it's enough to, you know, it was enough to do an episode, so.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of stuff was left out, even though, like, the couple articles I read, they were, like, pretty long, but I still feel like a lot was left out.
Yeah.
This would be one of many search warrants that led investigators out of Wisconsin.
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released an age progression photo of Alexis in 2009 that showed what she could have looked like at 14 years old. Another one was released in 2013 showing what she looked like at 17.
In 2012, police announced that they had re-interviewed 60 to 65 people connected to the case, as well as secured more than 10,000 pages of notes and evidence. Some of the people who had been re-interviewed said that they may not have remembered correctly and they may not have actually seen her the day she disappeared. Again, I'm thinking these are the kids.
Okay, that's what my note was. Yeah. are these the now teenagers that would have been her schoolmates at the time of the disappearance? But
that's what I'm thinking.
Gotcha.
A mixture between the kids at the time and then the teachers, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. It brings me back to the case that is near and dear to my heart. We didn't do it, but it's the Adnan case, because they were in high school, and a lot of them were like, they couldn't remember every detail of that day, because it's like, if you think something is insignificant, especially if you're just going about your daily routine and you get questioned about it, like, let's say a week later or what have you, you're not going to remember. Like, if I say, what you do last Tuesday?
Yep.
I went to work, but I can't tell
you. I can tell you now, I barely remember what I did yesterday.
Shoot.
So, because like everybody does this though, but like you'll walk into a room and be like, what did I come in here for? Yeah. Or something like that. Like, I do not remember things. Mm-mm. So, and then these were children.
Yes.
So.
And it was just another school day in their mind.
Maybe they saw somebody that looked like her.
Yeah, maybe. Or they could have been mixing it up with maybe even another school day. Like, yeah, we remember seeing her crying.
I
don't know.
True.
Hoping that some prisoners might know something, Milwaukee police included her picture in a pack of cold case playing cards that were sent to jails and prisons across Wisconsin.
In 2016, investigators received information from a man named Joshua Miller in Bryan, Ohio, who thought his ex-wife was Alexis. The two were married in 2009 and divorced 4 years later. According to Joshua, there were parts of her past that didn't add up. She had no memory of her childhood prior to her being 10 years old. I was just going to say, in her defense, I don't remember anything prior to me being 10 years old.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that point out, like some significant things, like a sleepover at that one hotel where all those crickets were. I didn't have to go into detail, but
I know what you're talking about, though.
And then, like, my sixth birthday. But yeah, no, I agree, D.
Yeah, like a lot of my childhood, I do not remember.
Also, wouldn't she have only been 14 in 2009? Like, how would she have been able to marry him? And I realize that that's going to come up, but that's just something to think about. Like, she would have only been 14. Yeah. So unless we're saying that it was one of those situations where she did get abducted, I don't know, and they were pretending to be her parents and they signed off on this, that would be the only way.
Oh, yeah.
Josh began digging in her past, and he came across the missing persons flyer for Alexis, where he discovered she and his ex-wife had a similar birthmark in the same place. Joshua's fiance also shared these suspicions, and they were shocked by his ex-wife's resemblance to the age-progressed photos of Alexis. Joshua traveled to Milwaukee with his son that he shared with his ex-wife to meet Ayana. While there, he gave a sample of his son's DNA to Ayana. The police department in Bryan, Ohio already had a saliva sample from his ex-wife. These samples were mailed to the Milwaukee police.
When authorities in Bryan met with Joshua's ex-wife, she was able to provide them with documents to prove her identity, including a birth certificate that showed she was born in Belize, her green card, and passport. This raised doubts about her being Alexis. These doubts were further raised upon learning that she was 7 years older than what Alexis would have been at the time, so she would have been 14.
And it is an inconsistency. I don't know that it's a huge inconsistency, because that is still really weird that they look the same and have those like defining traits, like the birthmark. When the DNA results came back from the Wisconsin Regional Crime Lab, it was determined the two samples didn't match. This proved that Joshua's ex-wife was not Alexis Patterson. Ayana questioned the results, saying the samples they used from Alexis could have been corrupted or have come from another source. She demanded that they perform a new test with her own DNA, but her request was denied. This led her to hiring a private investigator.
Ayana still believed that the woman was her missing daughter. She said the two have the same mole above their left eye. She also has the same birthmark, as well as a bump on her pinky finger and a scar under her right eye. Joshua spent 4 years working to expose the case, saying that he didn't trust the DNA results and wanted to get his ex-wife away from an unnamed man. Okay, sir.
I don't know. The whole thing is really weird. That she had all of those same similarities.
Yeah. One is a coincidence.
Yeah. One is a Nicholas Barclay. If it's a tattoo, it's a Nicholas Barclay. But what is that? Third episode, season one. But.
Yes.
Yeah, but all of this, and if there was, we talked about the birth certificate, or did we? Right? Already?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I feel like you can, that's a document. I feel like it can be forged. So the age thing,
yep.
And people don't ever know how old we are anyway. So the age thing, I feel like that can be faked. Yeah. Like, how old are you?
Yeah.
You look 12.
Yep. That's true. I was thinking about that too. Maybe she didn't look her age.
Maybe. Joshua still thinks that she is Alexis, but thinks she won't admit it because she's afraid of the people who she calls her family.
So I think he's talking about the unnamed man's family. I couldn't find anything on his ex-wife, so I don't know if he's her husband or boyfriend or, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe she's scared of his family.
Maybe.
So yeah, I really couldn't find anything on that.
He also claims that the FBI and Interpol are investigating something bigger in relation to Alexis's case, but this has not been confirmed. Joshua's ex-wife said she felt agitated and angry over the attention she had received. She claimed that some people who read about the case would just show up at her home. She did say that she felt sorry for the family and has fully cooperated with the investigation.
I could see how she would feel that way, because I'd be sick of it. But she could be her and just not know it, though. But if people are showing up at my house, we fighting. Or no, I'm going to call the police.
I was going to say, like, respectfully, like, again, yeah, she was respectful. I'm sorry that this happened to you guys. But I think also it's hard for people to accept everything that goes against what they've believed for so long. Because it's like, no, yeah. I know that this is my family. This has been my family for however long. And now you're trying to say that this isn't my family. I think that that's a lot to take in for someone.
Yeah. As of 2009, the case has been assigned to the Milwaukee Police Department's Cold Case Unit. There are no current suspects, but investigators have not ruled anyone out. Very little progress has been made in relation to the case, and there has been no physical evidence.
There are three main theories surrounding this case. The main theory is that Alexis's stepfather, LaRon Dine. That's what it made me think of. Okay. The main theory is that Alexis's stepfather, LaRon, was involved in her disappearance. Former sheriff of the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office, David Clark, believes LaRon was involved, but says they were not able to prove it with the evidence they had. He feels that Alexis was never dropped off at school the morning she disappeared.
Okay, I kind of believe this because her classmates said they saw her crying on the playground, but later they said they weren't sure if they saw her or not. So it is possible that he never dropped her off. And he's yeah. just always been sketchy to me, so.
Because of his name?
Yeah. I mean, just because of his past. And he was abusing Ayana, so.
That's a possibility. Because the fact that she, to believe that she was dropped off at school, never went in, just sat in on the playground and cried, and then just disappeared. It's weird to me. It's weird to me.
Yeah. In relation to this theory, it is thought that her disappearance could be connected to prostitution. It was rumored that LaRon was a pimp and had prostitutes on the north side of Milwaukee. However, this has not been proven. LaRon has repeatedly denied any involvement in Alexis's disappearance. And also, he failed a lie detector. I know those are not 100% accurate, but
right.
I wonder what questions they asked him for him to fail.
Yeah, I thought about that. I don't know. Probably for sure, did you have anything to do with Alexis's disappearance? That was probably one of the questions.
Yeah. Yeah, but for him to fail, I don't know.
And then if their theory rings true, that's that he could have possibly like sold her into prostitution. That's pretty sad because she's 7. Yep.
Yeah, but it does happen because there are a lot of child prostitution rings.
That's really sick. It's sick in general, but yeah, to definitely do it to a yeah. child is... Another theory, which is a conspiracy theory, is that the town of Bryan, Ohio is made up of missing children who don't know who they really are. This is the town where Joshua and his ex-wife live. The theory also states that Joshua and his ex-wife know that she really is Alexis and have been instructed to keep quiet.
This makes sense to me because... there are too many coincidences regarding her appearance. The DNA didn't match, but they could have easily tested the mother's DNA and they chose not to.
Yeah.
The only thing that's off is the age difference, but, you know, that could have been faked as well.
The last theory is that Alexis's disappearance is drug-related, but there is very little evidence to support this theory.
Ayana believes Alexis is still alive and continues to celebrate her daughter's birthday every year. In January 2021, her stepfather, LaRon, who was the last person to see her before her disappearance, was found dead in his apartment of a drug overdose. Milwaukee police say they are still investigating the case and are still receiving tips. Alexis Patterson would be 25 years old at this time.
If LaRon was a drug user, couldn't the theory of her disappearance being drug related? Like, because there was a story, I don't have all the details, but it was a 3-year-old little girl that was like kidnapped and murdered, and it was drug related. It was like because somebody had yeah. stolen some drugs or owed somebody some money. Because that could very well be the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. So if you go by that theory, most of the theories point to him.
Yeah.
In some kind of way, it all goes back to allegedly. But now, I mean, we'll never really know unless they find some type of evidence because it's not like he can come forward now. Yeah. So my thoughts, I believe that LaRon is somehow responsible, allegedly, because besides the conspiracy theory, all of the main theories point to him. Some kind of way, it all comes back to him. So those are my thoughts. I don't know why he would have done it, but why do people do what they do? I don't know. But I think he did it, allegedly.
Yeah, I
unfortunately, I don't think she's alive. unfortunately.
You don't think that the ex-wife is her?
That one is tough because they're like all of those features she had, like every single one of them.
Yeah.
So that makes me believe that it is her. But then again, the age, even though the age could have been faked, that's the only thing that disproves it, and the DNA. Yeah. But they believe the DNA might have been corrupted, so that's tough to believe. I want to believe it, but I don't know, because it could be her. There's a possibility that it could 50-50 that it could be her.
How did you come to your calculations?
I'm not good at math, so I couldn't tell you.
No, I guess a 50-50. I mean, it's a 50. It is a 50-50.
Yeah.
I mean, my final thoughts. Yeah, I feel like LaRon is at the center of whatever happened. I do believe that. Even if it is a situation where Alexis is Joshua's ex-wife, I believe he still has something to do with that. I don't know how. I don't know why. Yeah. But that's the only thing I can think of. I think that there's a lot to this because it is still unsolved. And it's just sad. It is just sad that this happened to begin with.
Yeah.
That is all, folks.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram at It's a Strange World Podcast, Twitter at Pod Strange World, and on Facebook and TikTok at It's a Strange World After All. Also, turn on those notifications for our Instagram posts so that you can keep up with our hashtag Myth Mondays and hashtag Strange Saturdays posts.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. Let us know what you thought about the disappearance of Alexis Patterson. Also, if there is anything in the world of Strange or any true crime cases that you would like us to cover, let us know. Have you ever heard a strange bump in the night? Have you ever seen shadow figures moving about? Have you ever stumbled upon something unexplainable? We want to know about it, and with your permission, share it with our listeners. You can email those submissions to itsastrangeworldafterall@gmail.com or DM us at any other social media platforms D mentioned. Even if you just want to say, hey there, we'll be here.
Thank you for tuning into another episode of
It's a Strange World After All. And thank you, as always, for keeping it strange with us. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye.